today we're going to talk about grief. Because we talked about that last time, you said, but then it's still kind of the issue, the ball kept rolling for you. Really.
Yeah, so when we talked about, it was 4 weeks ago, wasn't it? We talked about grief, and it was just before Bob's memorial service. In fact, we heard trying to break in into the town hall while we were towards the end of our interview. And then we talked about Kyle as well. And so I decided that the best thing to do would be to write an article about grief, because I couldn't believe that I hadn't written one before. So I started to write the article, and it's taken me quite a while. It's 2,500 words, which most of my articles are about 1,000, so it's quite extensive.
Yeah.
And that was because I realised that a lot of people are suffering from grief, but they don't realise that they're suffering from grief, because we tend to think it's when we lose somebody's past that we grieve.
Yeah.
And I did say that we could grieve for, you know, also loss of a job or loss of financial security.
Do you think, here's a question, do you think there's an increase in grief at the moment? We've come out of all the COVID stuff.
Absolutely.
Like I've been talking a lot on the show with various people about there's something going on out there at the moment for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so that was why I wanted to talk about it again today, because I did some research on, you know, what other people had written about grief, and I couldn't find anything that was reasonably in depth. They were all quite superficial and about 600 words or something.
Yeah.
And so I did do that, and I also, you know, talked to a lot of people about, you know, like you have, about what's happening for them, and I found that there's, you know, people can be grieving, so lots of things that people might not have even thought was grieving. They might feel sad and not really understand grieving as such. So I thought maybe we could go over some of those. And I'll just mention the article, so, because, you know, we're short for time this morning. But it's, if they go to insideyourmind.com and then click on free articles, I think it is, it's the first one, and it's called how to recognize and recover from grief and loss. And so I actually put it up on my Facebook page the other day, and one of my cousins in the UK, who, she lost a son about three months ago, and then her dad died about 2 years ago, and the dog had died. You know, she's just had like one thing after another. So some of the ways that we can experience grief are through loss of a job. So that could be through retirement. So, you know, I mentioned before, I used to work at County's Power as the HR manager, and this was a long time ago, and we used to find that our inspectors, who had been electricians, had moved up, and then they'd, you know, have a lot of experience and they'd become inspectors, that they would leave work at 65 and they'd be dead in 2 years. And so I said, this isn't good. We're going to send them to retirement seminars. So they had those things at that time. They didn't want to go, but I said they had to. They didn't dare argue with me, you know. So off they went, and they had to take the wives as well. Because when you said to them, what are you going to do when they retire? It was always, well, I'm going to go fishing and paint the house. And I go, well, what are you going to do when you finish painting the house, you know? Oh, we're going to help my wife. And I go, well, does your wife know about this? Because they've had like 35, 40 years of being on their own and doing their own thing.
Yeah, and the wives do mention this as an issue.
Yes, right.
We know.
So it was great because, you know, after a couple of them had been, they just passed the word on and everybody went on that.
Yeah.
But that was a thing about they're retiring and only thinking about what was going to happen in the next 3 months and not thinking about after. And then they just kind of lost motivation and, you know. So they could lose a job through retirement, through redundancy, or the latest one is through mandate. So a lot of people have been mandated out of a job that they absolutely loved and ostracised from communities. And so that's a huge loss, not only to the people that have lost the job, but also to the people that remain there. They must feel something about that as well.
So, at the very least, they feel very busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Which has certainly been a problem for the health system.
Yeah. I could lose a pet. I could lose a house. I could lose a limb.
These are all things that you feel.
Yeah. So, really, you know, sometimes people might have to have an amputation, or they might have an accident and lose a limb.
I had to lose a tooth a few years ago, and that annoyed me. It's just a little thing, but it was the first little thing that had come out of my body that I wasn't getting.
You weren't really happy about it.
Yeah.
Well, things like, you know, people have their appendix removed. They just say it was no use, but every part of us has got a use, you know.
Yeah.
So losing health, so that could be your own health or somebody that you love's health, and so you then become a caregiver. So you've lost a sense of freedom, which is something else we can lose, you know. Loss of a dream. So that could be, you know, a result of a loss of a limb or disability or health. And then the person that's lost that then isn't able to pursue a dream that they had, you know, because of those limitations now. It could be a precious item, for example, an heirloom, you know, something that's been passed down and then it gets lost or something and or stolen or whatever. You know, I mean, when I was in Auckland, I had my house stolen. They broke in through my bedroom window, took all my jewellery and a few bags, and my cameras and some bags to take it away, to take it all away. And fortunately, some friends were staying and came home and stopped them from anything else. But
basically,
some of that was stuff from, you know, when I was 12. You know, a signet ring and, you know, some stuff that Mum and Dad had bought me, some pearls and stuff like that, that were, you know, some of it was, I don't know whether it was reasonably expensive, but it wasn't that point. It was the point that somebody had given it to me and that I'd had it a long time, you know.
It's funny, the reactions in my head when you were listing those things, I was thinking, jewellery, it's just jewellery, it doesn't matter. Then you said cameras and I was like, no, take my camera. This is what's going on in my head, right? Because what matter to me.
Exactly, yeah. And see, the cameras, it didn't matter to me as much as the jewellery because the jewellery had been bought for me by different people, most of it.
Yeah, or, so it's quite significant.
Yeah, it was just significant in that way. It wasn't, you know, ridiculously expensive, worth millions of dollars or anything like that. But to me, it was precious, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was, I was like that. I was in a mess for about 2 weeks and then I went, oh, for God's sake, pull yourself together. It's just things, you know, but they are just things, but they're also just a loss.
Was that enough to tell yourself to pull yourself together?
It was just things, to a certain extent. And then I got insurance, you know, but you can't replace them because it's not the same thing, you know. Yeah, so that was interesting. And one piece I remember, I keep looking to see if I could find another piece similar because it was, I got it from Cornwall in England and it was a really special piece handmade by somebody. And I don't think the guy's even alive now. There's no way that I'd ever be able to replace it because it was a one-off, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just silver, but it was really precious. And so, you know, that was like every time I think of that, that's the piece that I particularly think about. Then I go online and see if I can find
it. See if there's another one.
No, nothing like it anywhere.
Yeah.
So friendship. So it's another loss. So people have lost friendships over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, not only that, but sometimes families are split up over things over the last couple of years as well.
And that's a grieving. They're possibly focused on how angry they are with each other, but you're saying there's grief under there too.
Well, there is. I mean, what's underneath anger?
Oh, yeah.
Often sadness.
Yeah, you know, of course. It's always on the surface. It's not the underlying
anger's
thing.
Anger's on the surface, so it comes across like that, but usually underneath there's fear and sadness and those kind of things, you know. So when friendships have been destroyed or not only friendships, but familial connections have been destroyed, then that's a source of loss. And even though people might not want to admit it, you know, if they're feeling sad or a bit depressed, the reason I'm mentioning this is because they might very well be grieving for some of these reasons or more than one.
Yeah.
Or other things of what I'm going to talk about. You can add to the list as much as you like. So we talked about, so the other one is financial security. So, you know, if somebody's, for example, lost a job or they've been mandated out of a job and they haven't got any money, you know, so that is a major thing for people. And it's not just in New Zealand. This is happening all around the world. You know, my friend of mine was saying that there's people living on the street in Auckland, and somebody in the UK was saying there's loads of people living on the street now because they just can't afford to live at home. So it's becoming a big thing, you know.
Well, that's the thing anyway, regardless of the whole pandemic scenario, the housing crisis was a rolling disaster before then, and now we're left with it.
And now it's got worse. And now there's more people that can't afford to, you know, to rent or to buy or whatever because of they've lost their jobs.
Yeah. And it was like I was at the Meet the Candidate, as I've talked about, and I've been meeting the candidates, and everyone's talking about housing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really hard on a community board to solve it. Tony just said, I said, can a community board solve it? No, of course not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm personally in that state because my house has been sold and I've got to find somewhere else as well.
You're still looking?
Yeah, I'm still looking. Mm. Yeah. So if anybody there can know somewhere.
Call us at the studio.
Yeah, call me. So then we've got relationship. So this could be through divorce.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it can be the loss of interaction with the spouse's family or the partner's family. Because, you know, if you've been married for, let's say, 20 years, then often there's, not always, but often there's a good relationship with the partner's family as well, which might be their parents, their brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And so that can be, you know, quite traumatic for the people splitting up, because it's not only that they're splitting from that person, but they're also splitting from the family. And then the kids might be split up as well.
I know situations where, I think of a couple who split up and the husband stayed friends with the father-in-law afterwards.
Right, right.
Yeah, they always caught up whenever they're in town, you know, sort of thing.
I know when I split up, I mean, I was always the one that used to, you know, keep in contact with his parents and everything, and then he never did anything. If it wasn't for me, he wouldn't have contacted him at all.
There's a lot of couples that works like that. Yeah.
So there's that, and then there's the children involved, and what's the impact on them? And I'm not saying people should stay together for the children. You know, I'm just saying that it's got to impact them and that they will suffer from grief as well. And last time I was on here, I was talking about the guy I saw whose wife had died of cancer, and he was struggling to look after the kids and cried and they were going off the rails, you know.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a separation as such, but it was a separation, but not in terms of a divorce.
Yeah.
But even going through a divorce, there's a whole lot of stuff related to a divorce as well, like sometimes feeling a failure, that you know you couldn't make it work because you made a pledge to make it work or whatever. And you know, so people can go through that just on their own. And I think there's a link in this article to a link on my other website about how, I think it's called how something about tender self-compassion, that we have to have compassion for ourselves in these situations. Another one is loss of country of origin. So this could be through migration or being a refugee.
So you migrated?
Yeah, I did.
And do you feel that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean,
interesting. But you'd made the choice to go.
Yeah, to come. Yeah.
Or to come, yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting because before I came to New Zealand, I lived in France for a year. And I lived in France, and all the time I was in France, I was like, I enjoyed France, I like France. But then I was like, oh, I miss my parents and I miss, you know, my brothers and sisters. I miss the town. And then I went back at Christmas and thought, and realised that all I ever did was argue with mum and dad anyway. argue with my brothers and sisters. The place where I lived was like really smoky chimneys and it was not a nice place, even worse now. I'm going, what the hell am I doing? So when I came here, it was quite good for me because I vowed that I would remember the things that I didn't like about England so that I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult because it's, you know, you think, well, you're coming to another place where they speak English. Well, we couldn't understand anybody and nobody could understand us. In the first day we were here, we went to the ANZ Bank because we'd opened an account in England, in Penrose, in Panmure, in Auckland.
Yeah.
To transfer the account. And the girl said to us, would you like a chicken? And we said, a chicken. And she goes, no, a chicken. And me and my husband looked at each other and I said, oh, they must be giving away chickens. This is really different, you know. So
it's a free chicken with every account open.
Yeah, that's what we thought. And we thought, wow, this is really weird. And she was getting really annoyed and she kept saying, no, a chicken. And in the end we said, well, could you write it down? We've been here like 2 hours or something. And she wrote, would you like a check account?
So...
And it sounded like chicken to us. Would you like a chicken cat?
You still have a clear accent.
I know.
You sound like the part of the UK you're from, but was it much stronger when
much stronger. When I go back to the UK now, they tell me I sound like an Australian.
You're typical.
And I go, yeah, you tell my friends that, right? So it was really, really tough. And I remember, you know, we'd been here probably about 3 or 4 months. We went to Auckland Zoo one day to just, you know, do something. We didn't have a car or anything. And there was a guy walking around with a T-shirt that said, Bash a Pom a Day on the front.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like...
Good old days.
Yeah, it was, you know, so it was really hard. And my ex-husband is white as the driven snow. As people may know, I've got dark skin.
Yeah.
Because my father's Jamaican. And it's like, you asked for the bus fare. And I go, no, it's your turn. Because we didn't want to sound like poms. Oh. And, you know, so it was really hard for for ages, you know, to settle in. And when other people, because it's not only the language, but we thought we'd come into an English-speaking country at that point. But it's the whole culture is different.
Yeah.
You know, although it's part of the Commonwealth, it's a completely different culture.
And that's funny because New Zealand is probably the closest to the English culture of the collection, like South Africa, Canada, Australia, and all the other places that England invaded.
Yeah, exactly.
We are probably the closest, but there's still that. Yeah, and the immigrants who came sort of 20 or 30 years before you, I think, were the ones that set up the whole moaning pom scenario that sort of thing. Like the English immigrants aren't like that now,
right?
But there seemed to be something. Some scenario, or maybe we were more prejudiced.
I think what it was, you know, looking back and, you know, working in HR and stuff like that, is that in England, because the population's so big, like there's, I don't know, 55 million or 60 million now, the jobs are more specialised. So my ex-husband was a fitter and turner, I think.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that when we came here. He did something else in England. But when he came here, he was employed as a fitter and turner. So that's what he did. And then they'd say, well, can you do that? And can you do this? And he'd be like, well, no. You know, because whereas here, you've got that number eight fencing wire that attitude. You just do everything because you have to, because there's not 60 million people.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true, actually. There is.
And
yeah.
I think a lot of it was that. And so they thought they were being abused by being told they've got to do this, that and the other thing, when in fact that wasn't the case at all. It was,
and we
just
thought they were being difficult
because
they wouldn't do things that seemed perfectly normal.
And they didn't know how, because they hadn't been taught that, you know.
Yeah.
So
and
I
there's,
think
yeah, there's an expectation here that you'll just figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of a lot of it, yeah. And I've worked with a lot of migrants or immigrants as well over the years that have discovered, you know, a deep sense of grief with moving to another country, sometimes because they didn't want to, because they were refugees, or they'd come with family or something like that. And especially kids, you know, 13, 14, they're like, all their friends are left behind.
Yeah, once you get to about 14, I lived overseas between 12 and 14 in a culture in the islands where, like, I was the only person with blonde hair.
Right.
And the little kids used to come up and touch my hair to see if it was real. Like, that's how isolated we were.
Right.
And to start with, at 12, it was cool. I just made friends with everyone. By the time I was 14, I was at that point where I wanted friends who were similar to me, and it became a lot harder.
Yeah,
yeah.
So there's a lot of grief associated with immigration as well.
Back to the grief, yes.
Yeah, and then loss of a child through death or miscarriage.
That's a serious one.
Yeah, it is. I know. Loss of independence. So, for example, through illness or age or disability. You know, and that sometimes ties in with freedom, which is the last one I've got here. So, you know, if you've got loss of independence, then you've got a sense of loss of freedom as well. But freedom also, for example, from the COVID restrictions, we've all experienced restrictions on freedom. You know, we've been locked in, locked out, locked up.
Everyone's had a different, some more than others.
Yeah,
Like I didn't, like I still did what I always did. Walked to work and did my show, so I just was busier.
Yeah.
So I think I was on the really easy end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
For myself, but I know, I recognise that most people weren't.
Yeah, and so that lack of freedom that most have experienced in some way or another, you know, to a greater or lesser extent in the last 2.5 years as well, but it also could be from anything else, and then a cultural way of life. So loss of cultural way of life. So that, again, is probably from COVID restrictions. We haven't been able to do the things that we wanted to do for a lot of people. Like some people couldn't go to restaurants because they didn't have a vaccination or refused to wear a mask or anything. So there's a whole lot of society got isolated because of that.
And generally...
And then there's this general kind of grief of the whole situation. I would never have believed that New Zealand could become like that.
But like what?
Like divided. Divided by vaccinated, unvaccinated, masks, unmasked,
I think people got stressed, and once people are stressed and fearful, then things it kind of made me, this is kind of off topic, but it made me understand why there are politicians who use introduce fear into the situation to help their vote, and you could really see how effective that could be during COVID, I think. Yeah.
Well, and also it's a way of controlling people. The more fearful they are, the more control you have over them.
Some of them became very uncontrollable.
Some of us get very uncontrollable.
Yeah.
I think that's my heritage. When I was in Jamaica, they said that all the slaves that they had in America, the ones they couldn't control, the black slaves, were sent to Jamaica.
Oh, right.
So I think I've got some heritage of being a bit rebellious, you know.
Yeah. That's like I say, the difference between Australia and New Zealand is that New Zealand got all the successful criminals who escaped. And Australia got the ones who got caught. So we're a better class of criminal in this country.
Yeah. That's probably a good way to finish it off. But those are just some of the ones. So I'll run through them again quickly. But again, if people want to go to the website and read the article, it's on insideyourmind.com, and they just click on free articles and it's the first one.
Yeah.
So we could lose you through a job, lost my experience through a job, through retirement, redundancy or mandate, losing a pet, a house, a limb, your health, your own or someone else's or someone you love, a dream, a precious item, for example, an heirloom, friendship, financial security, relationship through divorce and sometimes the loss of the interaction with the spouse's family, country of origin through migration or being a refugee, a child through death or miscarriage, independence, for example, through illness, age or disability, cultural way of life, for instance, COVID restrictions and freedom, for example, COVID restrictions or disability. And grief can involve anything from that list, and there's other things. I mean, I could go on for like hundreds. Yeah. So, well, the whole idea is that if people just think how they're feeling, and maybe one of those things, or more than one of those things, because I think probably a lot of people may be experiencing more than one. That can come back to, how they're feeling. That's grief related to sadness and all the other things. And also in the article, I covered some of the things that we talked about last time, and I put the podcast that we did last time on there as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, people can listen to that. And it took a while to write, but I think it's worthwhile because it gives you some strategies to help you get over it.
Yeah.
Not get over it, but come to terms
with it. Yeah. I'm glad we had this conversation because I have been asking the question, you know, what's going on and what's a way, there needs to be some kind of community ritual or some ritual for people to deal with the stress that's left over from the COVID period. But just calling it stress hasn't been that helpful. But pinpointing it a little bit more at grief, I think is really good. And I think a lot of people might be like,
that.
And then we know what to do with grief.
Well, some people do, some people don't, and some people don't recognise it. Well, I didn't recognise some of the grief that I was experiencing. I just thought, what the hell's wrong with me, you know? Yeah. And I'm experiencing this. And then it was like, oh, after we'd had the conversation, I went, oh, okay. And then talking to other people, they go, yeah, you're right, you know, it's his grief.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just recognise it. And then there's some strategies to, as I say, to come to terms with it on there as well.
Yeah, but recognising it as a... hopefully it's a penny drop moment maybe for some people, just like
and it can keep coming back, you know, like we think we got over it and then somebody can just say something to us or we hear a piece of music and off we go again, and it might be 2 or 3 years later or even 20 years later. So that piece of music or that song or that photograph crops up and we go, oh, I remember that, and then, you know, that might have been a happy memory, so now it's tinged with sadness, you know.
Yeah. All right, well, look, Stephanie, thank you heaps for coming in. You're welcome. We've been talking to Stephanie Philp, neuro-linguistic programmer, sort of counsellor, business.
No, I'm not counsellor.
Not counsellor. Well, I'm trying to...
I'm a coach.
Coach.
I'm a coach. There's and a trainer. Word.
Coach. Yeah, all right, cool.
And writer.
And the article at insideyourmind.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, if people want to check that out. Thank you for coming in.